Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Liberty Financial Group Full Year 2022 Results Conference Call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. James Boyle, CEO. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you and welcome everybody, and thank you for taking time to listen to Liberty Financial Group full year result for the financial year 2022. Presenting this morning, we have myself and Pete Riedl, our Chief Financial Officer. I'd like to start this morning by acknowledging the traditional owners of all the lands we're meeting on across Australia. Pete and I are presenting from Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people land at the Kulin Nation, and we pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. We'd also like to thank the traditional owners of these lands for the great care that they've taken of them for well over 60,000 years and the exceptional enjoyment that we derive from them. This morning, we plan to share with you the highlights, and then we'll quickly move to the numbers, as we appreciate that's why you've tuned in, and Pete will take you through the results analysis. We'll then loop back with a summary of the business segment performance and our views about the path forward. We are delighted to once again deliver a very strong result for financial year 2022, with record loan originations and both portfolio and profit growth. We're particularly proud that counter to industry trend, we've been able to maintain our net interest margin. Our cost-to-income ratio remains stable, and we finished the period once again stronger from a balance sheet perspective than at any point in our past, with a return on equity of 20%. We've continued to manage the portfolio risk exposure, resulting in record low delinquencies, and in the meantime, continue to invest in our improved digital experience for our customers and business partners. We're also particularly delighted that we've increased our distribution to security holders. More specifically, over financial year 2022, we delivered an underlying net profit after tax and amortisation of $231 million, which was up 2%, net revenue of $635 million, up 6%, as mentioned, a stable net interest margin at 3.08%. We've once again delivered benign, bad and doubtful debts. Our cost to income ratio has stayed at the same level at 23%, and we've been able to increase our distribution to security holders by 7%, increasing it to 49 basis points from 46. From an operating perspective, we've grown our average financial assets from $12.1 to $12.7 billion, which is an increase of 5%. We had record loan originations of $5.6 billion over the year, which was a 36% increase on the prior period. We've reduced our impaired loans by 37%, down to $152 million. Our team has increased by 5%, and we are once again delighted to deliver improvements in our net promoter scores for our brokers of 81, increasing by 8%, and for our customers of 64, increasing by 19%. I'll now hand over to Pete for the results analysis.
Thanks, James. The Liberty Group achieved record earnings for the full financial year ended 30 June 2022. This record was achieved as each of the key value drivers of our business improved or remained stable compared to the year ended 30 June 2021. Underlying net profit after tax and amortisation, or NPATA, increased to $231 million in FY22, an increase of 2% compared to FY21. As previously reported, the difference between underlying and statutory NPATA relates to the costs incurred in executing the IPO. The profit growth result of 2% and the lower second half 22 profit result compared to the first half 22 was influenced by the increase in the RBA cash rate in May 22 and the resulting increase in our funding benchmark rate being the BBSW, or bank bill swap rate. Total revenue was $429 million for the second half 22, an increase of 2% compared to the prior corresponding period. The increase in revenue was driven by an increase in new loan origination and average financial assets. Whereas total revenue reduced in the second half 22 compared to the first half, this trend will reverse moving forward as yield increases in connection with the RBA's ongoing expansionary interest rate cycle. Net revenue, representing total revenue less interest expense, was $310 million for the second half, an increase of 4% compared to the prior corresponding period. Net revenue increased due to the increase in average assets while maintaining a relatively stable net interest margin of 3.05%. NIM reduced to 305.
Sorry, I can't help you with that on Apple Watch.
Sorry about that. NIM reduced to 305% in the second half 22 from 3.14% in the first half, principally due to the expected increase in our funding rate as the RBA raised the cash rate. During and since the IPO process, we consistently explained that recent NIM results benefited from an unsustainably low funding rate of 1 basis point. We explained this low funding rate was temporary and would reverse as interest rates increase, which will consequently result in a reduction in NIM. When the RBA increased the cash rate in May, our funding rate moved from 9 basis points below cash to an average of 8 basis points above cash. This 17 basis point increase in BBSW has been fully absorbed into earnings. As a result, NIM reduced in the second half and will continue to fall until the interest rate environment stabilises. This outcome of an increase in the cost of funding and reduction in NIM was expected. Bad and doubtful debts has been negligible through the reporting periods. Loan write-offs, which are low, have been fully covered by existing provisions and the collective provisions have been retained to support balance sheet strength. And notwithstanding a 5% increase in staff between FY21 and FY22, the cost-to-income ratio remains stable at 23% for FY21, FY22 and the second half 22. Average assets of $12.7 billion for the second half increased by 5% compared to the prior corresponding period and 3% compared to the more recent first half 22. New loan originations of $2.7 billion for the second half resulted in a full year company record of $5.6 billion, an increase of 36% compared to FY21. The growth in average assets, though, continues to be impacted by an elevated level of customer churn. Loan yield reduced to 4.92% in the second half from 4.99% in the first half. This reduction is due in part to the impact of generating new loans at lower yields compared to the average portfolio. Positively, group yield expanded by 5 basis points in the second half 22 with the continuing shift in the portfolio mix toward higher yielding assets in the secured and financial services segments. The expansion in yield from the shift in asset mix has occurred over each reporting period since we IPO'd. As noted earlier, yield will continue to increase in future periods as the RBA cash rate increases. The level of lending income between periods is consistent with the movement in new loan originations. Commission income increased in the second half compared to the prior corresponding period, following firstly an increase in our network of NNB, LNS and MPM brokers and advisors, and secondly due to an increase in the value of loans originated by these aggregation networks. The slowdown in the New Zealand economy has been more pronounced than in Australia, which has impacted property and lending transaction volume. This caused commission income to reduce in the second half compared to first half. Liberty's total cost of funding is comprised of two components. The benchmark funding margin, which in our case is principally the 1 month bank bill swap rate, or BBSW, and additionally, the investment return provided to our funding and debt capital market partners. Our benchmark funding rate increased by 114 basis points during FY22, whereas the RBA cash rate increased by 75 basis points over the same period. As such, our funding rate moved by 39 basis points above RBA cash rate movements. On average, our funding rate increased by 23 basis points in the second half compared to the prior corresponding periods. Notwithstanding the significant increase in the bank bill swap rate, our total cost of funds remained relatively stable at 1.87% in the second half. The increase in bank bill swap rate of 23 basis points was mostly offset by the reduction in margin paid to our funding partners and debt capital markets. The funding margin was 163 basis points in the second half compared to 184 basis points in the first half, a strong reduction of 21 basis points. Achieving access to new funding is important in being able to realise our growth ambition. We were successful in raising new funding of $4.6 billion in FY22 and $2.1 billion in the second half. Importantly, total wholesale funding limits increased to $6.6 billion in FY22, a level in excess of FY22 originations of $5.6 billion. Since 30 June, we have raised a further $600 million from an RMBS issue, and we will look to continue to issue additional offerings into the debt markets prior to the end of calendar year 2022, subject to market conditions. This funding activity places Liberty in a strong liquidity position to continue to support our customers moving forward. Consistent with the previous results presentations, we have deconstructed bad debtful debts into its four components: the value of realised losses, the release of specific provisions relating to losses that have left the portfolio, the increase in specific provisions relating to loans still on the balance sheet, and the change in collective provision. The absolute level of realised losses are low and always more than covered by existing provisions. The increase in specific provisions has also been consistent, reflective of our stable portfolio risk characteristics and borrower behaviour. The collective provision has remained consistent throughout the reporting periods. So when aggregating these four components, bad and doubtful debts has been negligible through the reporting periods. The next slide characterises the portfolio into three risk stages and outlines the level of provisions supporting the portfolio. Summarily, we remain strongly provisioned, which will provide support to future earnings in the event unexpected customer outcomes arise. The value of loans in the higher risk stages 2 and 3 have fallen throughout the reporting periods, consistent with the recovery of customers impacted by COVID. Whereas the economic risk from COVID has passed, new risks have emerged in the form of higher living costs, higher interest rates, and falling property prices. Pleasingly, at 30 June 22, and as at today, we are yet to see these environmental factors emerge in the form of increased borrower stress. By way of example, the absolute value in impaired loans has reduced throughout the reporting periods as well as at today. Notwithstanding the reduction in COVID-impacted customers in portfolio delinquency and in loans in the higher risk stages, the collective provision has been maintained at a consistent level throughout the reporting periods. The collective provision calculation has been reset to current and best estimate future economic conditions and to reflect how customers may be impacted into the future. Provisions specifically covering COVID risks have been removed. Provisions now cover a higher likelihood of economic downturn into the medium term. We have assumed a 65% chance of property prices falling 10% in FY23 and 15% in FY24, and we've assumed a 30% chance of property prices falling 20% in FY23 and 30% in FY24. In relation to unemployment, we've assumed a 65% chance of unemployment remaining stable and a 30% chance of unemployment increasing to 5% in FY23. After factoring in the impact of these potential economic scenarios, provisions total $64 million or 49 basis points of average financial assets at 30 June 2022. The level of provisions is 8 times more than the underlying annualised level of realised losses. As such, we remain strongly provisioned as at year end. Gross fee and commission income expense, moved throughout the period in line with the movement in fee and commission income. And total operating costs and the cost to income remained relatively stable through the reporting period. The final distribution for FY22 of 28 cents relating to the 7-month period ended 30 June 2022 will be paid to security holders on the 31st of August. The total FY22 distribution per security of 49 cents is 7% higher than FY21 and represents a payout ratio of 68%. Consistent with our capital management policy of distributing within a range of 40 to 80% of group net profit after tax. The total FY22 distribution equates to an unfranked yield of approximately 10% based on the recent security price. An interim distribution for the 5-month period ended 30 November 2022 is expected to be paid by 15 December 2022, again within the range of 40 to 80% of group net profit after tax. Finally, we remain a strongly capitalised financial institution and have strengthened the balance sheet over the past 6 months. Liberty Financial Proprietary Limited, the principal operating company in the group, had its investment grade rating affirmed at BBB- with a positive outlook following release of the FY21 results. Liberty remains the only non-ADI in Australia with an investment grade rating. Our leverage ratio, as measured by total assets divided by net assets, reduced to 12.8 times at 30 June 22 from 13.2 a year earlier. This ratio being materially lower than any other non-ADI, along with the investment grade rating, demonstrates LFG has the strongest level of equity capital supporting its financial obligations in the non-ADI sector. We believe capital strength is critical to ensure the financial durability of any business, and in particular when market and economic uncertainties emerge. Connecting financial performance and position together, LFG generated a market-leading return on assets of 1.7%, consistent with the prior corresponding period. This is a very strong result in the context of industry NIM contraction. Additionally, LFG generated an ROE of 20% for FY22, which was an improvement on the prior year. This ROE outcome is about double the major banks with similar leverage and similar to the other non-ADIs for half as much leverage. Overall, we have delivered a strong FY22 and second half 2022 result. Positive portfolio growth and performance, a continuing shift in the portfolio towards higher margin assets, stable operating cost efficiency, each of which delivers earnings growth at market-leading measures of risk-adjusted returns. This concludes our remarks on the results analysis, and I'd like to hand now back to James to give a business update.
Thanks, Pete. So as Pete's covered, we've delivered a very strong result with regards to record earnings, originations and driving portfolio growth and counter to industry trend, maintaining our net interest margin, leaving us well positioned, we think, at the cycle change with regard to opportunities ahead. The better detail about how we've achieved this results is in a few different ways. In our residential lending activity, we've managed to increase the activity and maintain our portfolio given the extraordinarily competitive nature of activity in that particular segment. In our secured segment, we've continued the growth of both our SME and SMF lending, and we've also generated additional growth through new channels in our motor lending. As Pete mentioned, we've driven improvements in financial service fees off the back of the heightened level of activity across the board in broking and lending distribution channels. And all the while, we have also continued to improve our environmental social governance. When we look at the segment originations, you can see that the record originations for the year were in two halves in the residential space, where we were slightly down on our originations over the second half, but significantly up over the comparable half for last year. As mentioned, we continued to generate heightened momentum in our secured originations, coming in at 714 for the half, which was an increase over the last year of nearly 66%. As also mentioned, our financial services income has continued to grow with the heightened level of activity in the market, which means as a group we were able to generate 36% increase in originations over the year. If you look at how that impacted our loan portfolio, we did finish the year with a higher residential portfolio than the prior period. We significantly grew the secured portfolio, finishing at just shy of $3.8 billion. We generated further growth in our financial services portfolio, finishing at $419 million, which meant that for the period ended, the group had an overall portfolio of $12.9 billion, 5% higher than the previous period. We thought it was worth highlighting, and Pete's talked about this already, the net interest margin for the period compared to the Australian domestic banks that have published results in the last couple of weeks, which are higher again than some of the other non-banks that have also more recently published their results. So at 3.08%, we consider ourselves to be the strongest net interest margin across the cohort. That's been stable through the period, and that really talks to our continued investment in diversification and the benefit of generating asset growth in areas outside residential when the hyper-competitive nature of residential lending is impacting the net interest margin of many. As Pete's also mentioned, we finished the period in a stronger position than really at any point in our past with regard to portfolio risk. Our 90-day delinquency down to just 1.2%, and the number of customers with ongoing impacts through COVID significantly reduced down to 0.3%. With regard to our environmental social governance, we are in the process. We continue to be certified by B Corp. B Corp is an index that allows us to measure our environmental and social impact on the community. Internally, we've committed to carbon neutral footprint by 2030 and begun the process of measuring our current footprint. As mentioned, we have launched our Reconciliation Action Plan, our Reflect Reconciliation Action Plan, which we're getting great momentum within our internal community and connecting with our external community through. We've improved our gender diversity metrics. We're particularly proud to have won the Women in Finance Employer of the Year Award for the financial year 22. We've also expanded our leave policies to support diversity, and we're in the final stages of completing our Financial Inclusion Action Plan. So as we turn our minds to what lies ahead, it's clear in our view that the economic circumstances that we have been trading in are changing rapidly. We think that the recent interest rate increases and heightened inflation and cost of living suggest slower credit growth in the period ahead. We do think that they will stimulate continued refinance activity of fixed rate loans, which are at an all-time high, and we feel better positioned to participate in that activity than we were previously when a lot of fixed rate loans were being written. We do think that the impact on cost of living pressures means that there are more customers that will need our support, both in terms of customers within our portfolio, but also customers in other lenders' portfolios who find themselves looking for lenders who are better able to support them. Our team have done an exceptional job in supporting our customers through the challenges of COVID and the recent changes in economic circumstances, and we're quite confident that that will continue. As Pete's gone through in some detail, we do expect that there will be net interest margin reduction as funding costs normalise over the coming period. We do expect that we'll be able to continue our accelerated growth in our secured segment, particularly through our auto finance partnerships, and we will continue to invest in improved digital experiences for both our customers and our business partners so that we make it easier and easier for customers to find and engage us with their needs. So in conclusion, we think that we have delivered a very measured growth in financial assets with regard to our portfolio. We finished the year with a stronger liquidity position and capital position to support future growth. We continue to focus on optimising our earnings through the cycle and think that we've demonstrated the start of that process. Our distribution is providing healthy security holder returns. We have a diverse customer. We continue to deliver our diverse customer solutions where we balance margin pressure with customer outcomes, and we continue to make ongoing investments in our path to market to connect with more customers in more ways so that we can generate great benefit for all of our customers moving forward. That concludes the formal part of today's presentation. We are very happy to take any questions that anyone may have.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Josh Freeman with Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Hey guys, congratulations on the result. Just a couple of questions from me. So I guess they're both sort of focused on margins. So I might just start. First one is on the asset side. So competition's continuing to weigh on margins. I guess in the environment of probable tightening of major banks' credit assessment criteria, as well as rising rates and potentially rising impairments, how do you really see the competitive intensity moving for the mortgage book?
Hi, Josh. Thanks very much for the question. I think it'll be interesting. I mean, it's unlikely to abate for mainstream customers with low LVRs that have got strong earnings and great credit. I think there'll be heightened competition, if it's possible, for that particular cohort. Because as you mentioned, what we're seeing is a caution entering the views of many mainstream lenders, which is then reflecting in a more conservative credit risk appetite. And, you know, broadly, what we're experiencing at the cycle change is a re-rating of return for risk across the risk spectrum. So what that means is there's likely to be slightly less competition for the customers that fall outside the mainstream credit appetite, which isn't to say those customers will be unserved. There's ourselves and other non-banks that continue to be prepared to help those customers. The interesting dynamic will be to see how quickly the pricing for those customers adjusts. As you know, we've been very mindful and careful about how we take risk and how we price risk, and we think that we do that, you know, reflecting the current economic circumstances. There is a possibility that some who aren't as mindful about their risk taking get caught up in the core competitive pricing through the banks and, you know, take that same view for customers that fall outside the mainstream credit appetite. But I think given the statements that we've seen about compression on net interest margin and the increased cost of funds, that's less likely than it might have been if we had have just sailed through to this period without that significant change in bank bill swap rate. So increased competition at the core, less competition around the perimeter with more intelligent pricing is what we're anticipating.
Understood. Thank you. And I guess for my second question, I just want to ask you about your funding options. Are you able to really provide a little bit more color around the current market trends or availability for RMBS ABS market, as well as, I guess, any color you can provide on unit economics difference between securitization issuance spreads versus holding more loans in warehouses?
Thanks. That's Pete. Thanks, Josh, for the question. The debt capital markets have had a difficult time this year. I think that's well known and well recognised as debt investors have sought safer havens, perhaps when in global economic volatility and in particular interest rate volatility. So what we've seen across the course of really since sort of March, perhaps the majority of the calendar year, is less appetite, if you like, or less demand for new offerings from principally the non-ADIs, but also the banks in debt capital markets. Typically, though, we see markets normalise over a period of time, particularly when economic future economic scenarios stabilise. So whereas there has been challenge in this period, I think once the economic certainty becomes, the economic future becomes more certain, I think, and therefore priced for risk more certain, then I think you'll find more investors globally re-enter the market. So that's not to say that there hasn't been issuance. We've certainly seen issuance in the market. We've also issued, as I mentioned, and we anticipate being able to continue to issue for the remainder of the calendar year. So where it has been challenged, there has been availability of liquidity for us and others in the market. And with respect to your second question about the pricing differential between term and wholesale funding, that's not information we disclose. That's commercially sensitive, so we won't be providing that information.
Understood. Thanks.
Your next question comes from Min Pham with Barrenjoey. Please go ahead.
Hi, James. Hi, Peter. Thanks for taking my questions. Two questions, if I may. The first one just on provisions. Understand delinquencies and hardship data is very benign and you run some numbers on the downside scenarios which you've provided today. But given the headwinds and a skewed growth in the higher risk secured finance and financial services businesses over the past year, do you think now is the right time to decrease provision coverage?
I mean, it's Peter. Thanks for the question. With respect to provisions, we've held provisions from an absolute perspective pretty stable. The provision coverage, I'm not sure, has moved materially, so I'm not concerned about that. Equally, what we would say is kind of two things. One, you know, very analytical in that we manage very. I have developed very sophisticated tooling to be able to connect borrower characteristics with potential future economic scenarios. And so the scenarios that I've outlined, I think, are relatively conservative. And so on that basis, the provisions that we have maintained on the balance sheet, fully support potential risk downside. Then, moving away from the numbers and perhaps more to behaviours, I think the resiliency of the consumer to date has been, you know, very, very strong. And I think that's a function of, notwithstanding increase in interest rates, still relatively low absolute rates, high affordability, good savings rates, and despite some reporting by the RBA, I think, being low wage inflation, we've certainly seen stronger levels of wage inflation in our borrowers. And in addition, of course, as everybody is aware, rents are increasing as well. So the market tends to focus a lot on additional costs, and that's appropriate, but equally there have been increases in income available to borrowers to offset higher costs. So with all of that, all of those observations, we feel that we are very well and supported by our current provisioning.
I might just add one further comment, Min, which is, of course, it's relative, and we're coming out of a period where our provisioning reflected great uncertainty in our customers and our view on the impacts of COVID. And so, you know, it's not sort of a normal through the cycle adjustment, and we're coming out of a period where that COVID impact has been significantly reduced, but then we've got increased uncertainty through economics, as Pete explained.
Great, thank you. And maybe just a second one on margins. Looking at the segment income disclosure, I think margins in resi looked a bit better than peers despite the BBSW moves over the period. Is that a function of slower growth in that segment? Was it a mix, or did you benefit from the timing of repricing?
Well, it's a few different things. I mean, we've taken a view over the long to medium to long term of not sort of rushing in and being overtly aggressive, competing with banks for new business, and I think that's not necessarily a consistent approach taken by the non-banks. Also, we've also taken the view that we take our product to market, you know, as a Liberty product. We don't white label, and we don't do partnerships where we give away economics in order to access the market. And I think some of our competitors do that as well. So I think, to your point about perhaps slightly slower growth meant that you know, our competitors were being overtly aggressive with their front book pricing, which is, you know, quickly bringing their net interest margin down, where we were being very balanced with our front book pricing and trying to find a way to differentiate our offering in other ways rather than just yield. I'd say that's the main driver.
Great, thank you.
Your next question comes from Jeff Kai with Jarden. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. Just a question on runoff. So it looks like the runoff in your mortgage book has improved half and half, but not as much as peers in the second half. Can you talk through what you're seeing there, and more generally, how do you see runoff trending for your prime book going forward, given the repricing efforts and competition from larger lenders?
Hi, Jeff. Yes, thanks for the question. It's an area of focus for us. It did improve half on half. We're hopeful that we can continue to improve as we move forward. I think that the lack of sort of traction in this area has been a point that's challenged us historically. We certainly and that we've attributed to the very aggressive competitive forces that have been at play in that space. So in some ways, similar to the earlier question from Josh, we expect that there'll be less competition for some of our customers than there was if house prices continue to reduce, and as there's pressure around more conservative risk-taking for traditional lenders. That should expose less of our customers to discharge and amortisation. Also, over the last, 2 years actually, we've seen uncharacteristic amortisation of our portfolio, which is not customers leaving us, it's customers putting more and more money down against their home loans than they had historically. More than 90% of our customers are in advance of their repayment schedule, and living cost of living pressures increase, and people become more accepting that COVID is behind us, we expect that that amortisation will feature less. So we hope that that will also help as we move forward to see more of our origination momentum dropping through to portfolio growth than we saw in the last year.
Thank you. Just a quick one. So you know that you're focused on optimising earnings through the cycle. Can you sort of give us more colour on how you think about that and what sort of key metrics you're managing to?
There are a lot of the metrics that we've shared with you today, to be honest. You know, we think it's important at this point in the cycle to be strong from a liquidity perspective, and from a leverage perspective, we think it's important to be more conservative. We certainly are very mindful about how we price our products in their path to market, so we try not to get sucked into, buying market share and then trying to reprice it on the way up, but to be more consistent in delivering a very fair, balanced price to the customer. And then we try, if we can, to differentiate our engagement with our customers through a service metric. So we're particularly proud, and if I'm honest, a little surprised that we're able to generate improvements in our net promoter scores for customers and brokers, because that we felt that they've been unsustainably high in the last couple of results, and yet we were able to generate improvements again. What we seek to do is provide a really fair price and a really exceptional service for our customers and for our brokers that is a little less dependent on price. And then in terms of the broader business, be operating in enough different markets that if one market is suffering, rampant compression of margin and competition, as in the residential lending market, that we can generate growth in other markets that are not as exposed to those factors whilst, maintaining a balanced strategy in that particular market, which is what we've been able to do to deliver these results today.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Paul Byers with Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Good morning, James, Pete. First one from me, please. So you just called out expectations of a slowing in credit growth, which is obviously, completely in keeping with the current environment. I was just curious to know if you could give any colour, I guess, on the recent months' trajectory in terms of your loan applications across your two main segments.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for the question. Consistent with our outlook, I would say. So, we've continued momentum in the areas that, you've seen shown today. There's been a slight softening in the highly competitive residential space, but not a radical drop. Very, very consistent with our outlook so far.
Thank you. Okay. And then just another one on the funding side. So just to kind of, and again, you've been very clear in terms of calling out expectations for NIM, but just to kind of unpack it into the BBSW effect, I guess, and the funding margin effect. So if I understood you correctly, Pete, you kind of saw 8 bips on the benchmark side. So my first question is, do you think, and again, you and I always talk about this and it's a bit of crystal ball gazing, but where do you think that spits out? I mean, BBSW has been running above the long run sort of spread above cash now that it's gone back to being above cash. So I guess I'm just trying to work out what your current thoughts are in terms of the benchmark. And then secondly, on the funding margin side, having got a benefit in this period, do we assume that that's kind of neutral into the next 6 months, or does that eventually start to become a bit of a headwind for you again?
Thanks, Paul. So on the bill side, where it lands, nobody knows. I feel like that might be a line from a movie. But what I can tell you is since 30 June, bills has run 16 basis points above cash. So it's gone from 8 to 16 in a matter of a month. 2 months. That's about the long-term average. Whether or not it increases beyond that is really difficult to predict. But that's the facts. It's been 16 since year end. So everybody's very interested about this concept of exit NIM. You know, we reported 305 for the half, and bills has gone up 16 basis points since. So I think that gives everybody a sense for where we're currently positioned. With respect to the funding margin, again, that's equally challenging. If we issue into the term markets at levels that have been reported from our peers, and that number specifically is about 175 basis points for a AAA bond, if that is now the prevailing return that the debt capital markets are seeking, that obviously is higher than the 163 margin we've just reported. So if that is now a normalised return, then yes, it becomes a headwind. The harder question to answer is 175 now the prevailing return expectation of debt capital markets? And that's a difficult one. I'd be hopeful it reduces, again, as economic uncertainties perhaps become less uncertain. But, you know, time will tell. But we are currently facing headwinds, but hopefully they moderate, but difficult to predict.
Got it. Thanks, Pete. And then last one from me, just on secured, and obviously that's just been a continued success story in growth and profitability, and you called out, I guess, expectations for more of the same, and particularly in auto. So just keen to understand, firstly, sort of what you see in the various segments on the go forward, but in particular, what's supporting your optimism on the auto space in particular?
Yeah, thanks, Paul. So a couple of things. I think we talked in last half about having recently bought a commercial product to the market, and we've continued to see that hold appeal through both broking and dealing channels. And then in addition to that, in the half, we have added a number of dealer relationships that we didn't previously have. So we are generating more business through dealer networks than we have at any point in our past. And so the combination of both of those and an imminent revisit of our consumer product means that we're generating, new records of motor loans month on month. We hope and expect that we'll be able to maintain that.
Thanks, Shaza. Just then quickly on SMSF and commercial?
More consistent with previous periods. So, we continue to differentiate against the majors with SMEs that are looking for more bespoke solutions. We've seen a slight reduction in demand for SMSF lending, which I think you can attribute to bottom of cycle change. I think businesses are sort of slightly more conservative just while the dust settles with regard to interest rates. But what we expect is that once we get to a month where the RBA don't increase and the dust does start to settle, that will return, because essentially what drives the demand for SMSF lending is wealth generation, long-term wealth generation strategies. So they tend to be impacted a little bit at cycle change, but they shouldn't just disappear. So so a continuation of our previous strategy, which to the earlier conversation, which should also benefit, we think, a little from more conservative risk-taking from mainstream lenders, which is to say, I think small businesses by and large find the service that they get from the main bank or traditional lending cohort mixed, and I think if we're moving into a risk-off period from those lenders, I think it'll be more mixed, which is the increased of benefit in opportunity for us.
Right. Thanks, guys. That's all for me.
Thanks, Paul.
Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone. Your next question comes from Brendan Sproules with Citi. Please go ahead.
Good morning, team. Look, I just have a question on your outlook where you talk about the NIM reduction due to funding costs normalised. Just trying to think about how I should think about that. You know, if you look at the residential division, the net interest margin was around 50 basis points lower pre-COVID. Is that what we're sort of going back to?
Hi Brendan, good to connect. I'm not the numbers person, but I don't follow the 50 basis points, so I won't talk to that. But what I will say is our view of normalising is not far removed from this view of the RBA will keep increasing interest rates until such time as they feel that inflation is back in the appropriate zone, or so they say. That consistent increase in interest rates and the uncertainty of just how long that's going to go on for, and we've seen overnight, the Fed double down on the same strategy, means that in debt capital markets we're seeing sort of volatility that we haven't seen in years. And so when we talk about normalised, it's clear to us that we're sort of bottom cycle and moving into a new period, but it's not clear exactly what that period will be. And I think until we get to some reduced inflation numbers internationally and locally and some more predictable cash rates, then I think in all probability the bank bill swap rate and debt funding markets will continue to jump all around. And so far the trend has been up in terms of cost, not down. So I think it's those observations that we're sort of cautioning, continued uncertainty until normalising.
I think, Brendan, if I could take your 50 basis point on notice, because I think it kind of depends on point to point. But, you know, again, reflecting on many conversations that we've all had together since IPO and some of the comments I made earlier, to call out the numbers, you know, our highest NIM result was first half 22 at 3.14, I think. And in the IPO prospectus, we referred to 2.8% as being, at that point, a level of normalised NIM that we think is sensible when you remove the tailwind we've all benefited from through the COVID period. So again, the point-to-point 50 basis points I'll come back to, but I would recommend that you go, if we can go back to the IPO document and have a look at the NIMs that were being discussed in that document as being a more normalised level than we've reported in the last three halves.
Okay, and maybe just a question on the secured finance division. Seen quite a bit of asset competition in that division, particularly over the two halves of the just completed fiscal year. In terms of, I guess, the competition there from the non-bank players, it feels like everyone's trying to get into auto and particularly into self-managed super lending. Are you expecting that competition to continue to heat up and even though it's stronger growth, that we should expect that over time the net interest margins in that division will continue to drift lower?
Yeah, Brendan, I think, yes, there'll be increased non-bank competition, but we would hope that that will be rational competition, meaning, the non-banks are far more exposed to the impacts of the current economic cycle through debt markets because they don't have deposit funding, and so they're less, not less able historically, but right at this moment in time, less able to take a price lead strategy to sort of build their momentum in those markets. I think that's what we've seen a lot of them do in residential lending, where there was the tailwinds that Pete talked about that seemed to just keep blowing and blowing. And we said consistently, you know, that's not real. It's a false sort of benefit that we're all inheriting because of the huge amount of money that was pumped into global economies through the pandemic. And so we didn't think it should factor into long-term strategy. The reality is that the non-banks don't have that same tailwind anymore, so they'll have to be rational about the way that they go after those markets. And I suppose to some extent we've got a bit of a first mover's advantage in those spaces. So yes, you know, competition's inevitable, but we think we'll be able to maintain our momentum at least through the next period.
Oh, perfect. Thanks, gents. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Brendan.
There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back to Mr. Boyle for closing remarks.
Well, thank you, everyone, for taking the time to tune in. We hope we lightened up your Monday morning. We were thrilled to deliver what we think is a very strong and differentiated result in our cohort. We continue to do the important work of helping our customers and attracting more free thinkers to the business. And we'll look forward to catching up with many of you in more detail over the coming days to discuss more. So thanks again and have a terrific Monday.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.